Hello. Welcome to the Documenting the Journey podcast. This show is for anyone trying to build a high-performance organization. You're going to hear thought leadership and breakthrough ideas on strategy execution, performance management, and of course, continuous improvement. Let's dive right in.
Hey, everybody. This is Calvin Williams with Improver, and I have the honor and the privilege to be here with Kim Jansen today. Dr. Kim Jansen, I should say. Kim is the Chief Executive Officer at Jansen Associates. She's an author of two exciting books that you should definitely add to your reading list. One is called Determining Leadership Potential, Powerful Insights to Winning at the Talent Game. And we're all playing the talent game one way or another. The other one is called Demystifying Talent Management. And if I understand right, we just released a second edition to that one, right, Kim?
That's right. Yeah, we're excited about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Kim also has executive leadership experience with H.J. Heinz, Bank of America, Hasbro, and some other fantastic companies. She's very impressively educated, got a Doctor of Philosophy of Business Administration and Organizational Leadership from North Central University. She's got a MS in Organizational Development from Lesley University and a MA in Teaching from Rhode Island University. And it doesn't stop there. We also got a BA in Education from the University of Rhode Island. So, Kim, how are you today?
I'm terrific. Thanks for having me, Calvin. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. So thank you so much for making time to chat, taking time out of your busy day to catch up. So, yeah, let's dive into your background a little bit more. Tell us a little bit about what you've done and what kind of work you're doing now.
I'll tell you, Kevin, I have had the best job in the world. I'll say it all day long. I've said it for a couple of decades. I have more than 20 years experience in helping people and organizations figure out how to be their best self. So as you mentioned, a number of large global organizations. And then for 10 years, I've been running Jansen Associates. And around the world, I've worked in more than 40 countries on the ground, working with CEOs and leadership teams to figure out how to have the best talent, how to have that talent be their best self, how to have a high-performing organization. And then in between, I sprinkled some academics along the way as well. So between chief talent officer and chief diversity officer, head of leadership, all of those elements have put me in a place to learn from C-suite, CEOs, boards, but also help enable their success. So thanks for asking. I just have the best job in the whole world.
That's amazing. That's and inspiring too. So I'm curious, how did you recognize that this was such a problem to be solved? And then, you know, how did you get so involved in helping companies to solve it?
Well, I guess my origins is from the fact that I'm the youngest of 10 kids. So they had 9 kids in 10 years, and then 6 years later had me. And I had 11 parents and raised myself. And you add in that I'm a horsewoman. And to be very successful with the horses, you need to listen well, anticipate, read people. So, you know, growing up in that microcosm of a business in my household, all of that fueled very strong diagnosing skills, assessing skills. And so that's always been part of me. I didn't know what I wanted to do in undergraduate work. I nearly was complete with my double major in math and computer engineering. And I thought, this doesn't feel like me. I switched to a triple major in English history and education. Everyone was saying, oh, be a teacher, summer's off. It still didn't feel right. Mm. And then my brother was running Lockbox at Bank of Boston at the time. And he said, you know, Kim, there's this emerging discipline called corporate training. And this is in the early 90s. He said, I think you'd be great at it. And you have such a business mind and you have a strong capacity to teach and coach that just get your foot in the door, get any job and get your foot in the door and then let them see what you have. And it was really great advice. And I found immediately it was a perfect match. And, you know, being the youngest of 10 children, I'm not shy. I have lots of opinions and I took a lot of freedom to coach without being asked to help people be successful. And it just continued to morph into larger roles time and time again.
Wow, that is fantastic. So I'm thinking of a few things, like with the family dynamic. When you're the 10th kid, a lot of time the parents are tired after three, right? Feeling parented, right? The older kids are now the parents, right? It's I'm from a family of four, and I saw too much of that. But also from being the youngest, you probably saw a lot of things that maybe not so functional, maybe not fair for, you know, the youngest of thee. And you, I could see how you can make a lot of connections between that type of situation and what we see in a lot of corporations, right? Where, you know, employees may not be reaching their potential because of, you know, some systematic things that may be in place. I don't know if that mirrors your experience.
Yeah, in many ways. So, I mean, my mother was 45 when she had me. So talk about fired. And I took full advantage of that, meaning I had a lot of autonomy and could make my own decisions. And I grew up very, very quickly at a young age because everyone was an adult. Wow. And because of that, I was granted quite a lot of room to, you know, experiment or take responsibility. And I'm not one who was told no easily. And so I then was surrounded by high performing people. Almost everybody was at the top of their class, the top of their sport. And that built, you know, in a high performing organization, you want to rise to the level of the other high performers. Right. And so I found that. And then to your point, I learned a lot about navigation, because let me tell you, Pat is nothing like Cindy, who's nothing like Kate, who's nothing like Rick, and figuring out how to meet people where they were, and then navigating those dynamics, and then watching how people were successful and where they failed was a lot of good data to then bring in to a workplace to figure out, you know, how do we navigate each other and then help others to do the same.
Yeah. And I bet being the youngest in that situation made you somewhat of a good entrepreneur, I would imagine, right? Finding your own way in the world, despite all odds. I think that's still sharp as steel in a sense, right? So when it comes to high performing organizations, right, you touched on it a little bit already. What are some of the greatest challenges that you see companies facing as they try to build HPOs?
Yeah, I think there's several. One is they rely on the success of what got them there. And they, in order to continue to be a high performing organization, you can't be complacent in any way. And so that means you need to have robust talent systems to make sure that you have the right people for what you're trying to do. That means you have clear strategic planning processes so that you are clear about where you're going. You have mechanisms to experiment, beta test some ideas. So risk management is a part of how you think and how you run the organization, but it's not an anchor. You then have capacity and capability to translate those strategic plans into operating plans. Year one plus two plus three has to get you to where you said you wanted to be in 3 years, but that needs to be then driven down into the organization, because when you add all of that together and roll it up, it's got to get you to year one outcomes, and you got to do that across the board.
Hey guys, this is Calvin with Improver. Just want to make sure you're aware of the hottest new leadership book on the market. It's called Fit, The Simple Science of Achieving Strategic Goals. If you love Toyota Kata, 4DX, growth hacking, A3 thinking, Scrum, Agile methodology, you would absolutely love Fit. It provides a ton of excellent case studies and testimonials for how you can create a high-performance organization through the application of agile strategy execution and continuous improvement. Go to Amazon.com right now and search for FIT, The Simple Science of Achieving Strategic Goals, and get your copy today.
All of that takes strong leadership, and leadership is a science. It is as worthy of study and practice as French or financial acumen, but we don't treat it as such. And so that's one of the impediments, is that leadership isn't given the credence and the honor that it needs in order to then choose the right people to be leaders, help them develop leadership skills, cascade that through your organization. So what are the impediments? I mentioned some at the macro level. If you don't have a strategic plan, if you don't have a good operating plan year over year, if you don't have the capacity to drill that through your organization, if you haven't done the work around a talent plan to layer over the skills and capabilities over your operating and strategic plan. And then if you don't have good leadership, then you're not going to end up being a high performing organization.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's powerful stuff. So when it comes to leadership, in your opinion, do you think we have a crisis or shortage of good leadership? What do you think is going on there?
Oh man, do we have a crisis? We absolutely do. We have it in a couple of different ways. One is we are not picking the right people. There is something like $350 billion spent on leadership development every single year. But that's the equivalent to closing the barn door after the horse is out. Because we, in so many ways, are picking the wrong folks. So I think, number one, we have a root cause issue that we are not equipped with the right elements to pick strong potential people who will be strong leaders in the future. Second, we then don't have robust accountability around leadership outcomes, where we're tying compensation or incentives to leadership outcomes. And then the third is, God bless our world over the last 5 years. I mean, we have had such terrible examples of lack of community, lack of humanity. It seems like we've lost all of the basic elements of how to treat each other and decorum. We see poor leadership in the government, armed forces, in the church, in businesses. It's just rampant. And so I very much think that we're having a leadership crisis for sure.
Yeah. And if I was a licensed therapist, I might say we have a crisis of narcissism in our society. Yes. Right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, even before this moment in time, research will show you that at least a third of the sitting CEOs are clinical narcissists, for sure. But I would say in this moment, we've tipped the scales at more than 50%.
And that's too bad, because what it creates is a culture of idolization of individual people. Yes. over the greater good of humanity and society.
Yeah, which, I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, we see it unfolding in so many different ways. So very powerful stuff. So you mentioned that we pick leaders poorly. How are we picking leaders that's leading to this problem?
Yeah, I think there's several factors. And I have done three significant research studies in this area, along with doing a very comprehensive meta-analysis of all of the thought leadership over the last 50 years in this space. And what the research shows, and my research shows, is that when asked, what's the criteria that you use to determine leadership potential? And let's just take one study, where in this study, I looked at one industry, I looked at a dozen companies. I interviewed leaders at four levels in each of those organizations, the CEO, and typically each of the levels below that. In just one company, when I asked that question, I got 170 different responses. And that is not the exception. That's a good commercial for the lack of consistency, discipline, communication that's going on. So organizations don't have a clear framework. People are making it up at each level. You have wildly incompetent people making it up. And if you don't have a building block approach to developing leaders, I mean, who can ever pass the litmus test of 170 criteria? Right.
It's whatever side of the bed you rolled out of this morning determines if you
you're so who gets right. picked.
Yeah.
And I asked each of them, what do you think the next level down is using as criteria? And they were so wrong in that answer. I asked that for each level. That's just one example. So I think one of the issues is that there is not a clear framework by which people are making those decisions. There's not good communication on what that looks like for a particular organization. And then they're picking the wrong things. So for example, when I asked criteria, one of the most frequent elements that surfaced was performance. Hmm. Well, performance is not a predictor of future potential unless the jobs are exactly the same.
Oh, wow. That's powerful.
Performance should be a ticket to entry into a conversation about whether someone has the potential to do more, but performance and potential are two very different things. And so that's where we get the really strong marketer or IT person, et cetera, who have been promoted, who are terrible managers. So number one is, you know, that one example is performance, but then people are selecting folks who could be leaders based on what they have today in terms of skills. I'm not going to pick someone because they can delegate, because I can teach them how to delegate. So I have a framework that I think is tried and true in terms of four criteria, that if you have them, then you can be taught these other leadership skills. But another root cause for why we have people picking the wrong people is they're using the wrong criteria.
Interesting. So if you look at the C-suite of the Fortune 500, as well as their boards of directors, and, you know, unanimously across leadership, especially for larger organizations, there's a clear aesthetic pattern of white male dominance. Is there an aesthetic aspect to who is selected for leadership, in your opinion?
Well, that's a complicated question, and one I spent a lot of time on as a chief diversity officer. And I accepted that role and responsibility only after we had done the right work to create an organization where people of difference, regardless of whether it's physical differences or ideological differences, but people of differences could thrive. And so when you don't create that environment, then we're born with biases, right? Yeah. Our brain is from birth oriented towards biases of folks who speak and act like us. It's just a lot of research around the science of that.
Yeah. And so, and I guess if you're a white male or white female, the white male is dad, right?
That's right.
I hadn't thought about it that way, but I suppose that's true, right? There's some truth to that.
Well, some of the research will show you that most CEOs in the Fortune 500 company are white men over 6 feet. And that the income of those people is higher, but also if they're taller than that, their income is more.
Really?
It's insane.
How about that?
But that's the power of affinity, right?
Right.
They have unconscious biases that help us gravitate towards things that are familiar. So the flip of that, backing into your question, is when your employees or your customers or your shareholders look up and see only white men, then they don't see themselves and possibility for themselves. Or if there's, you know, at Hasbro, we wrestled with this. If the room is filled with a bunch of white men over 55, how many of them have been on the ground playing with a play school toy or G.I. Joe in the last week, right?
Disassociation.
So customers would get a little frustrated with that. So yeah, we are limiting ourselves when you are a one-trick pony. And so thinking about how to bring in people from different schools, different geographies, different genders, different races, all of the research will show you that the heterogeneous group in that room versus the homogeneous group in that other room, the better product will come out of the heterogeneous room. Now, It takes more time. There's often more arguments.
Yep.
And not a lot of people are armed with those capabilities on how to navigate that.
Yeah.
Is that a question for you?
Yeah, beautifully. Very well said. I want to dive deeper on your framework, right? You said four categories for selecting better leaders. But I do want to call out one thing about generation two. You know, we're just kind of surviving the great reshuffle over the last couple of years, partly due to the pandemic and other things in our economy, right? And I was talking to a customer just the other day, Improver customer, and he was saying that he's on the board of another company, and the chairman of the board, who's this older white male, is just ranting and going on and on about how some younger engineer was wanting 4 days off toward the end of a big project. And he was saying, you know, back in my day, there's no way in hell I would have taken 4 days off, you know, as we wind down on a big project. And, you know, it just highlighted a stark generational difference between the way people 30 years ago, you know, thought versus the way people today think, you know, young people. So I don't know if that's part of your experience too, but just thought I might throw that out there.
Yeah. I mean, when we're talking about diversity, one dimension of diversity certainly is age. And I think that all the generations previous to us probably said the same thing. You know,
I'm sure.
Just think about music. Turn that music off. Like, that's just terrible. How can you listen to that? So I think that's been a reality. I think that the generational differences are more apparent. And particularly if you have not learned how to meet people where you are, then it's easier to hold on to the ideals that worked with a particular generation. Now, right. As I say that, I'm not an advocate of not hiring people who work hard. I think you should hire really strong talent and expect people to work hard. However, make sure that social contract is fair. Working hard doesn't mean give me your whole life anymore. But it also means if you want to be granted more and distinguish yourself from others and to rise in the ranks, you're going to have to give some discretionary effort because it's an equal playing field in many ways, and it's a very competitive environment. So if you want to be more, you need to do more. And there's a lot of ways to do that. And that's why I'm such a purist in terms of performance management, because I don't care about measuring face time at all. I measure outcomes. And I think if we helped people choose talent differently, learn how to give good, clear expectations, become a coach, hold people accountable and measure to outcomes, these CEOs at these companies that are frustrated with talent would have a different reality. So I think at the cornerstone of performance management is a traditional idea, but I think it's the way to find freedom for people around the world who want to work differently or work in different capacities.
And the technology landscape is dramatically changing how people get outcomes, are able to get outcomes, right? It's no longer how many hours your butt was in the seat. It's what did you do when your butt was in the seat? and were you able to leverage the resources that have been made available to you to get better results, drive better outcomes? So I love that. I love where you're going with that. I'm a fan of what I call autonomous performance management, which means giving people the information, the tools, the resources to chart their own course and manage their own performance in real time, as opposed to waiting on the opinion of their leader to be developed and delivered.
Well, I think that you are responsible for your own employability. But the manager that is connecting to inspect, and inspecting to ensure, helps enable that autonomy to be merged with the company needs and priorities.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. So I think that's a great concept. But where it's manager enabled and synchronized, that's where the power of an organization comes together.
Absolutely. And that's where I see, you know, things like core values and strategy being key sort of North Stars that feed into that autonomous management dynamic, you know, if that can be done. So
totally agree. I want to get back to the question. You asked me about the framework. The framework is called.
I was just about to go there.
The framework is called the Leadership Blueprint, and it was created in 2014 by two men who have done such great work in this space. And one of them was head of talent for PepsiCo. And the framework simply says you need four components to be to predict high potential. People need to have high intelligence. The world, as you said, is changing all the time. We need people who has the intellectual capacity to think ahead of that or think with it, think in a dynamic way, have analytical skills, think longer term, et cetera. Second, we need a personality style that doesn't have personality derailers. You named one already. Narcissism. People don't want to follow them. They may be charismatic in the moment, but people who are very self-focused don't create followership, or people who are very negative or blah, blah, blah. So
not sustaining anyway, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we need personalities, but a variety of personalities make for great leaders, but they can't have major personality derailers. The third thing is high motivation. They have to bring their own engine. They have to have the initiative and ingenuity and passion and drive to lead, because people need to then help execute, et cetera. And then the fourth component is learning agility. They have to have the commitment to constant reinvention, but also they have to be able to assimilate information quickly to be able to do something with it. And when you have those four components, then they are very strong predictors of people who will be strong leaders, because then they can learn the rest.
That's fascinating. Wow. Those are great. And I could tell you now that in many organizations, it's not that.
Right.
It's not that at all. It's a lot of times seniority. It's a lot of time, like the aesthetic aspect. It's who's friendlier, like more likable, but not those kind of things, right? Those real things that matter in terms of sustaining followership and driving for results at the same time, right?
That's right. But the cost of those mistakes are so huge. And as organizations learn about those, I find a lot of my clients adopt this framework as part of the talent planning work we do. And it's, you know, sometimes you don't want to say someone is only average intelligence, but it's fixed. Like, come to grips with it. What you have is what you have. You can't make someone you like smarter. Someone who doesn't have really high intelligence isn't going to be able to handle the complexity and ambiguity that comes at those senior levels.
That's it, right? Because as a senior leader, you got to almost be able to see around corners, right? You got to get to D before everybody else gets to B, right? A, B, C, D.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well said. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the name of this framework again? Just so folks are listening and taking notes.
Yeah. It's called the Leadership Blueprint. And Alan Church is the person at PepsiCo who was one of the authors. Alan's just been an amazing guy in this journey. I anchored my dissertation and my PhD program off of the framework. He deserves so much credit. Siltzer is the other man, but if you Google the Leadership Blueprint, Church and Siltzer, you'll get it. 2014 is when they wrote it.
Gotcha. So the frequency of companies going outside to hire leaders is increasing. Do you have an idea why this might be and what companies can do about developing internal leadership?
Yeah, I think that in the 8 to 15 year range of folks of having experience, there's a big gap in capabilities, especially in a lot of the technical functions. And I think it had something to do with probably the 2008 global financial crisis. If you think about people who were laid off, they're missing big pieces in their pedigree of experience. They are finding that the people they have inside don't have, I would say, judgment, of being able to do the job. Now, here's how judgment is formed. And I wrote an article about this. So if you Google Dr. Kimberly Jansen, comma, judgment, you'll get the article. But it's quite simply, judgment is built based on a large variety of experiences over time that people then put into their data banks and draw down on and reapply in different scenarios. They sit with CEOs or boards and they say, that person isn't quite ready. It's because they don't trust their judgment.
Right.
And
so right.
A lot of times the people they're bringing in have had that larger variety of experiences. So it's something that companies can solve for, but you've got to start early and you need to, you know, think about high potential people. So identify the right ones and then put them intentionally in different places over time. What's their next role? 2 years later, what's going to be their next role? Next role, and do some very long-term planning with folks. And usually companies are trying to solve for the issue and need right now and aren't doing the good work of doing that work over time.
That's awesome. Yeah, I like that. So it's almost like you're making an investment in the future That's talent right. pool, right? You're maybe taking a little bit of a loss today for a long-term payoff.
That's exactly right. You need to have the discipline to do that.
True. Do you think CEOs today are under too much pressure for immediate results? And is that part of what's keeping them from investing in their talent pool internally?
I think for some companies, that's definitely a reason. I think also there's a lot of entrepreneur-led organizations. You just take real estate. Most of real estate organizations were started by a deal guy. They're right, not somebody right. who came up through, you know, PepsiCo or any well-oiled machine who taught you how to do this stuff well. And so many organizations don't have, and it doesn't have to be expensive infrastructure and set of routines, but they don't have any that have the discipline. I can't tell you how many successful organizations I work with who have large gaps in this organization, and we build it and we're solving for it, and their success is compounding even more. But it's a joke that many people don't get. They don't get it until the joke is explained to them. And when they get the joke, then lights out. They're going to take that to the bank. But not enough people have been in enough systems to understand what good looks like in this space. So they are undervaluing things that they don't know about or they don't understand.
That's it.
Sorry, one more thing to add to that. Yep. I'm pretty hard on the HR function because many HR folks are not really deep in their own functional expertise and they're not business experts. And I think you need to know the business, know how the business makes money, and then think about the people piece. But instead, in a lot of HR organizations, when this stuff is being done too many times, it's just a form that's being pushed to somebody, or randomly somebody gets something in their email that they have to do, but it's not connected to a larger set of things, and it's not done in a synchronized way. So it's death by 1,000 HR cuts, and people then push that away because it's a distraction rather than the HR people knowing the business can help them understand the fundamental reason why you want to do this, because, you know, it leads to this, which then helps grow your business, et cetera, et cetera.
That's it. Right. They're not coming in as a partner, but more of a tactician, executor of task level work. Yeah. I talk to a good number of HR folks, and that I'm seeing that being more of a trend where, you know, the ones who've been around long enough, they know they need to be at the table.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. And if they're not, they don't even want anything to do with it. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Kim, this has been amazing. I really appreciate you making time to chat. What book are you reading now?
I am reading one of my favorites, which I read a couple of times a year just to call myself out on my own stuff. It's called Leadership and Self-Deception.
Oh, yeah. I read that one. That's a good one.
Yeah. The concept is sometimes you can like be in the box and think that everybody else is the issue. And I'm just a wild woman, and I got red hair and I drive hard, and it's a good reminder for me a couple of times a year that I'm in the
sometimes
box.
Sometimes it's you. It's true. Because if you're intelligent, which you probably are, if you're a leader, then you're good at coming up with reasons why it's not you.
That's right.
So that's a great book for kind of a self-check once in a while. I think that's a fantastic thought. Any other ones you want to throw in there?
I think that the oldie but goodie, Marshall Goldsmith's What Got You Here Won't Get You There.
Okay.
Just a brilliant reminder for us to really distill how we're operating. And it's one, you know, that you can reread a couple of times throughout your journey, but that's another really strong one.
Thank you for that one. Consider it added to my reading list for the summer. Okay, good. All right, let's close out then. So if people want to get a hold of Dr. Kim Jansen and want to follow your work and what you do and just stay connected with you, what would be the best way to do that?
Yeah, I'd love to hear from folks. So jansenassociates.com, of course. If you want some great resources on this concept of determining leadership potential, we built a companion website that helps accelerate some of the ideas in the book. For example, if you want to interview for learning agility, we've got a whole host of questions on how to source for that. So that website is determiningleadershippotential.com. And then if they want to reach me directly, 1-866-WE-UNLEASH or kim@jansenassociates.com.
Kim, you've been amazing. You came through and put on a clinic for us. Thank you so much for that. And certainly got my gears turning 1,000 miles an hour. So that's exactly what I needed. So again, appreciate you coming through. This is great. And yeah, we'll certainly be in touch. We got to get together and do this again.
Calvin, it was a blast to be with you. Thank you so much for thinking of me. And thanks for having me today.
Yep. Pleasure's all mine. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
Thank you guys so much for joining us today. This episode was brought to you by the good folks at Improver Technologies. If you like the show, you can find more just like it at improver.com. That's improver.com, where you can learn more, do more, teach more, and transform your world. Thanks again. We'll see you soon.